This episode is brought to you by Cart Driver, Denver's home for wood-fired pizzas, fresh oysters, seasonal market plates, cocktails, and conversation.
Hey, this is Hannah, HRN's program manager. It's HRN's 10th anniversary and now our summer fun drive. So show your support for independent, revolutionary, entertaining food radio by becoming a monthly recurring donor. HRN is powered by a passionate community of thoughtful eaters, and we need each and every one of you to show your support so that we can keep bringing you your favorite food podcasts. It takes a village, and every dollar donated, every listener tuning in is essential to our continued success. So set up a donation for $10 every month. You'll show us that you want to be a part of a bright future for HRN. And you'll get one of our brand new limited edition Pizza Pocket t-shirts. So snag your new favorite tea and show us some love, all for the price of about two fancy lattes each month. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate today. And thank you.
I'm Massimo Bottura.
Hi, this is Amanda Cohen.
This is David Kinch.
This is Mike Anthony.
This is Huni Kim.
This is Amanda Freitag.
This is Richard Blaze.
This is Paul Kahn.
This is Curtis Stone.
This is Stephen Harris.
This is Missy Robbins.
And you're listening to Andrew Talks to Chefs on Heritage Radio.
I had just gone into my boss's office and I had asked for a raise and there was not a raise for me and I was working so hard and I was so stressed out. And I went back to my cubicle, leaving his office, and I sat down. I'm looking at this computer screen with this muscly man and I was like, what the hell am I doing with my life? I was like, am I really going to do this? Like, if I thought about the 10-year plan and in 10 years, am I going to be sitting here and I'm going to be, you know, just higher up on the chain and I'm still going to be doing this and I'm unhappy and I'm stressed out and I'm just doing something that doesn't really matter to me, you know? Like, I loved my coworkers and I have great funny stories from being the photo editor at Muscle and Fitness Magazine, don't get me wrong. But it wasn't fulfilling that need. It wasn't like a forever thing for me.
That is Dana Pollack, creator of the wildly successful company Dana's Bakery. Our guest this week on a special open kitchen episode of Andrew Talks to Chefs. It's gonna take a prolonged arrangement of the senses to make some sense of this. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Andrew Talks to Chefs. I am your host, Andrew Friedman, coming to you the day before Independence Day here in the United States. For those of you listening around the world, probably doesn't mean quite as much to you, but national holiday is upon us here in the U.S. as I record this introduction on Tuesday evening. This week, I'm bringing you one of these open kitchen episodes we occasionally do. It is an episode where we have someone who's not plying their trade in a restaurant per se, but who has a story that I believe is relevant to listeners out there. Dana Pollack left a career as a photo editor in the magazine world to find herself in the kitchen, to pursue a love of baking and creativity, created a company called Dana's Bakery. The mainstay of the company are her hugely creative macaroons. The pronunciation of that word is something that's a bit controversial. You'll hear us talk about that in the episode. But Dana is I'd never met her before, to be honest. We sat down at the Mermaid Inn restaurant, which has become kind of a home away from home for us. My friend Danny Abrams has been letting us record there at his various locations around New York City when I need a place to do that. And Dana's a powerhouse. She's got a really great, very forward, very good-natured, very funny personality. I think we gave each other the business a little bit in this interview, but I think we both enjoyed it. And, you know, a lot of people who enter the cooking trade are what we now call career changers. A lot of people entering the trade these days are not necessarily looking to be in or own a restaurant, as that business has become more and more tenuous. And it's much harder to make a living and to stay afloat in that industry. Dana herself, as you'll learn in this interview, spent some time in a few kitchens, quickly decided that wasn't for her, just temperamentally, and ended up going her own way, finding something that kind of caught her imagination, went for it, and has predominantly a mail order business, although they do have a couple of locations. And they don't just do macaroons. They do rainbow black and white cookies. They do special cookies for various holidays. I looked on her website today. They had a 4th of July selection, which will be in the rearview mirror by the time this show airs. They do custom orders for all kinds of parties and events and whatnot. And I don't think I need to say a whole lot more about it. I do need to identify there is a third person who chimes in and out of the interview, and that is my friend Christina Gurdovich. Chris used to be the publisher of Food & Wine magazine. I actually knew her before that. That's how far back we go. When she worked for an agency in New York City, as I did. She was one of the witnesses to my wedding. And a longtime friend. She's now doing some consulting and things like that, helping people like Dana do their thing. And, you know, Chris made this introduction, and I'm glad she did. I think this is a really terrific interview that you guys are going to enjoy. But you will hear periodically a third party piping up into the conversation, and that is my good buddy Chris Gurdovich. I also want to say to Dana, if you're listening, we have a conversation in this segment about what I'll call pregnancy brain, what you call the pregnancy brain. Initially, you'll hear in the conversation, Dana says, we'll leave out me searching for this phrase, but then we got into a rather amusing conversation that I believe it was your understanding by that point in the conversation, I was going to leave it in. My wife, Caitlin, heard it and thought that was the understanding as well. So I hope I did the right thing there. If not, my apologies. You can lay it all at my feet. Anyway, with all that, I'm now going to turn it right over to the interview with Dana Pollack of Dana's Bakery, recorded several weeks back at the Mermaid Inn on the Upper West Side of New York City. Here you go. So where do we start? Should we start with the fact that the awkward moment where you gave me a hug and I was trying to give you a handshake?
I would love that.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you, but I'm going to let...
Well, I'm going to explain that this happens all the time, which is, you know, I was at the Beard Awards a few weeks ago, and I saw someone I hadn't seen in years, a woman, and I went to shake her hand, and she said, oh, is that a professional thing? And I said, no, that's a 2019 thing. Like,
but you used to hug her previously, I'm assuming?
Someone I didn't know that well, okay. But everybody hugs everybody.
I'm a huge hugger.
It's New York.
I also love to invade the personal space. So yes. Like, I'm a big, you know, I'm a big hugger.
But you're also, I've met many women recently who I meet them for the first time, and I go to shake hands, and they're like, give me a hug.
Right. I went to hug you first, so well, I think that's, you know, that's okay.
I just think it's prudent not to be hugging these days.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to lead to some crazy accusation, but so here's what happened. Years ago, I went to a party. I think you might have been there, Chris, but it was Brad Parsons, who's a spirits writer. He had a book on Amaro, and they had a party in the back behind Frankie's and Prime Meats in Brooklyn on a beautiful summer night.
A lot of the time.
Yeah. So they had this party, and I saw a writer, much younger than I am, a woman, came in. And I went to give her a hug, and she, you know who you are, by the way, I'm not going to name you, but she stuck her hand out, if you're listening, you know who you are, and stuck her hand out, you know, and right. I felt very, like, shamed, you know, like, I felt, like, out of date, right?
Yeah.
And then there were two guys at the table where I was hanging out, and she kind of made the rounds and was talking, and then she came over to the table, and gives them both these giant
hugs.
Yeah,
they got the gist.
They got hugs. And the funny thing is, when I went to leave, I hugged the guy. I've been a hugger before. Hugging was... So I'm older than you are. I came of age in like the 80s and 90s. And I had a lot of friends who were in, you know, various 12-step programs. That's a hugging situation. I'm right. Not, but that's a very, you know, openly emotional group.
Right.
I'm overgeneralizing. I was in theater. That's a huggy group.
You're around hugs.
Yeah. And I also, to be honest, had a ton of friends who were gay. And that's a huggy group. So everybody was hugging. I've been doing that forever. And
everyone's hugging.
So I'm trying to retrain myself. And you are not, you.
I broke you this morning. Yeah.
We need to talk. Anyway, this is all.
We can hug after,
this
too.
This is a digression before we even started.
We can hug after.
So, okay. So you and I have never met before. There are two things I found compelling for listeners of the show. You know, we have this category called Open Kitchen where we have non-chefs, right? Okay. Rarely, but once in a while. I basically invented it because I was offered Phil Rosenthal last year. You know,
needed to place it. You needed to. It's different.
Well, you're an entrepreneur. If you have, if you're offered a guest like that, you got to find a way to have them on.
Yeah,
like you
sure.
Can't say, no. We just have chefs.
Sorry,
thanks,
it's not
anyway.
Happening.
Yeah. So, I don't honestly, as you and I are sitting here, I don't know where this will end up because you're not in a restaurant.
Right.
Right. You have a food business.
Right.
But you are a career changer, which is something that comes up a lot on this show, and you're also an entrepreneur in the food realm. Which I think a lot of people who want to be owners, which I think most chefs probably do, can learn from, right? So those two things I thought were going to be compelling.
There's a huge difference between, you know, being in food and loving food and owning a business. There's a big difference between being a chef and being an entrepreneur. And we can, of course, get into that. It's something that I find myself talking about often, especially when I started this. I went into it for my love of thinking outside the box and baking and, you know, running a business is a completely different animal. And I don't know which one I've learned more from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So before we get into all of this.
Yes. I kind of just gave you the end.
No, you didn't.
The end story.
No. We're not. It's not that predictable what happens here. So where'd you grow up?
I grew up in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Where?
A little town called Franklin Lakes.
I don't know where that is. What's
it
that?
Is,
where
is unfortunately, that? A lot of people know it now because of the Housewives of New Jersey. However, I grew up my whole life unscathed. Yes, nobody, no one knew what it was, and now it's
is that where
a bit more
popular. That's one of the hubs?
But no one even lives in my town, yet that's where they said that they did. So anyway, that's where I grew up. It's about 40 minutes outside the city in northern New Jersey.
Okay. Is it on the Jersey Transit line? Is it like
it's about 15 minutes
away? How
do people
who live there get in and out of the city?
Yeah, you take a train.
Yeah.
You take New Jersey Transit to the path to the city, or you drive.
Is it a commuter community?
Mm-hmm. People commute.
A lot of people in finance and stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah.
Got it.
A lot of people in finance. I mean, people work local.
Yeah.
You know, my dad was an entrepreneur. He owns a dental lab. He came here from Israel with his brother and opened up their business, and that's in the same town. So he didn't commute, but people, you know, wherever you live.
Your dad's Israeli.
Yeah, he's Israeli.
Okay. And how about your mom?
My mom grew up in Jersey.
Okay.
Yeah. They were set up on a blind date.
Wow.
So.
I'm envisioning two very strong personalities. I know that's stereotypical.
They're very, 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 very different. They're not together anymore, but friendly. Both still live in Franklin Lakes.
Okay.
My dad is, you know, fun, charismatic, typical Israeli, makes his own rules, you know, will go down the one-way street the wrong way to get the parking spot, or like growing up we would...
Right, and then yell at you if you have a problem with that.
Not even. He would like charm and make jokes with the cop
that
tried to pull him over. Yeah, he's really great in that
friend,
way.
My friend.
Yeah. So we would be, you know, growing up... We would be, you know, in line. This is before Fandango, and we would be in line for movies.
Yes.
We'd roll up, and there'd be a huge line. And my dad would just walk up to someone online and pretend he knew them, to the point where it was awkward enough that they let us sit there or stand there with him. And then he would get the tickets, and we'd roll in like no big deal.
This is one beyond Larry David. Did you watch Curb?
I mean, of course.
I think you had to with your genetic makeup.
Of course, yeah.
So, Curb Your Enthusiasm. There was the chat and cut.
I remember, yeah.
Where somebody, but that was based on
knowing
the person.
Dad,
you need but there needs to be like another element to that.
Is he
for your
doing
dad,
another season? Because it just came back.
Yeah, I think so. But what I mean is, the chat and cut was you would go up to someone you knew in line,
right?
Start talking. And
this
cut.
Is next this level.
It would need to be the something chat and cut, right?
Right. I have big balls. And I don't give a shit. I'm going to go in and pretend that I know you.
Right.
And I'm going to get my tickets. that's what he did.
Okay. What kind of kid were you? I'm going to guess extrovert.
So I've never been really shy.
Yeah.
I've always been the one to kind of push the boundaries and push the limits. I was always a good kid. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I was definitely a little fearless in that way. And I've always been very trigger happy. And, you know, when my eyes set on something... I will make it happen. And that's pretty much been the theme from, you know, schooling till after school to where I am now. It's just kind of been the theme, the thread of what pulls it all together.
What were your sort of, outside of academics. What were your pursuits as a kid? Like, did you were you an artsy kid? Were you?
I always loved art. I always loved music. My daughter is the same way. Well, I would sing, and I played a little bit of every instrument. I did sports. I kind of dabbled all over. I used to teach snowboarding. So I'm
big. That?
Mount Snow in Vermont.
Okay.
I was a certified snowboard instructor there.
Was that like a winter thing during college or something? Or was
it
that
was,
after?
You know, I started teaching at a local mountain as soon as I could drive. Before I could even drive, my mom would drop me off there.
Yeah.
And then I just continued to teach there. And then when I was old enough and had my own license, I got my certification in Vermont. And I would, during winter season. And I would, you know, I had like a... I had like a show promotion business, and I would always go to shows. I'm a big like metalhead rock and roll lover, so for me music was really big growing up, and I was always really artsy, and I gravitated towards that, you know. Now I run a business and I have to deal with numbers, but math has never been my strong suit.
Have you conquered the math thing, or had you have someone in your
you don't have a choice.
Well, you could have someone in your staff realm team who does a lot of that for you, although
but you have to
culturally
know it.
You would never accept that.
You have to know it. You know, I have
not
a great accountant.
Right. You know what I mean.
I have a great accountant and I have a bookkeeper. Yeah. I'm not going to pretend that I can actually do it all.
No.
And when it comes to the finances of the business, you're not, you know, that's something that you don't mess with. I mean, want to make sure it's right.
Well, every Jewish elder in the world believes that you if you own a food business, your staff is stealing from you.
Well, we don't take cash, so...
There you go.
There you go. I don't take cash for that reason. We are credit card only and online.
I never talk about my cultural background on this show, or anywhere, really, but you brought it out in me.
I'm tribe.
You brought it out in me.
Because,
you brought it out in me.
You could feel it.
I hope... I'm going to check. I got to see what my numbers are like after this week. See if I turned anybody off.
You're going to get a spike.
What's that?
Sponsored by 23andMe.
Well, we had... No.
J-Date.
No, excuse me. Ancestry.com in last summer.
Okay.
And that is the only genetic testing company that we mention here on the Heritage Radio Network. When you said metal, did you sang?
Well,
like,
No.
Oh, you didn't like front a band or something?
No,
okay.
I would DJ Metal Night. I would DJ Metal Night, and I would go to concerts and shows, and I've just always really loved music.
Okay.
It's always just been the passion.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that was my...
Now, you haven't mentioned food. Did you bake as a kid?
So I've always loved to eat.
Okay.
I would always bake, but with my art and my music, you know, I'd always like to think outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
I was always trying to do something different. So the irony is that I love to bake and I love to entertain. But I would never really bake something on my own. It would be like a boxed cake, but I would find a way to put my spin on it, whether it was colors or adding ingredients and things like that. It's when I decided to do my career switch that I wanted to take my passion for, you know, food and really get some formal training. You know, I was working as a photo editor and I was at Muscle and Fitness magazine.
Yeah, you're going way too fast for us though.
Yeah, I want to just like explain kind of, I guess we can get there.
Yes,
we'll get there in due time. But I've always loved to think outside the box, and that's kind of what the bakery is based off of today.
Got it.
To kind of bring it full circle.
Yeah. That makes total, yes, when you said that,
I
knew where this,
where we were going.
Well, yeah, to some extent. But you didn't think about pursuing
that.
No,
not until my light bulb moment, years later.
So you go to college?
Yep.
What'd you study?
I went to Northeastern for a couple of years in Boston, transferred to Parsons for photography, where I finished.
Parsons School of Design?
Yeah, Parsons School of Design with a BFA in photography.
Okay, so you were actually taking photos.
Yeah, I worked in the industry for 10 years.
As a photographer?
Photo editor.
No, but you did your own photography
in school.
As a student. Yeah. Did you ever do that professionally?
No, I always kind of worked as a photo editor. I went straight to, as much as I loved photography, and I, you know, still do it this day, but I never did it really professionally. Lighting stressed me out. I liked
stressed
more.
Stressed you out?
Yeah, I would always, get so stressed out with the lighting. No, but it would always stress me out. The lighting, you know, figuring out the lighting. I always had a problem with that. It was almost like math to me in a way, and it would really stress me out. So
it wasn't
so
the infinite possibilities.
Right.
You mean it was that you just...
The actual technical
doing it
lighting part
checking
of it.
I don't know what this is, but taking the meter out and all
the
that
aperture,
stuff.
The aperture, all of that stuff, it really just stressed me out. And I always loved the creative and the producing and the production, so I instantly went into... you know, assistant photo editor or intern, assistant photo editor, and then I worked my way up to, you know, my position.
What is photo? You know, I actually have a good friend who's a photo editor, if I'm honest, and I've done books and written for print, but what exactly
does a photo editor do?
Well, if you think about it, especially as people's staffs are being cut and whatnot, you know, I have a blog and I source photos from, you know, I'll call publishing
all
house
over
and say, send me a photo. I picked the best one. I've even cropped and kind of doctored them a little. And I'm like, okay, well, why do people need photo? You know, like, I could see why, like, a magazine or a publishing house, but what exactly is that job?
Well, today it's different than what it was when I was a photo editor. Now media has changed and mostly everything is digital. Yeah. A lot of the magazines that I worked for no longer exist or they're strictly online.
Yep.
So when you're a photo editor, you produce all of the photo shoots.
Yes.
You execute everything, you choose the models, you do the casting, you edit the photos to make sure that they fit for the story. You're basically coordinating.
Mm-hmm.
So you're doing everything from permits to, you know, budgeting to it's very much planning and it's very much organized. And, you know, as much as you want it to be creative when you're working in editorial, you can only be as creative as your story will let you. So,
or as house guidelines will lay.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right. So, you know, that was a little bit of a limit for me where I wasn't actually taking the photos, but I was making the relationships and I was creating the content with the photographers and I was hiring the hair and the makeup. And I'm a people person. I love to chat. As you know, I love to hug.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that aspect of being the person that weaves everyone together, having a budget, allocating everything, and just making the magic happen. So when you're a photo editor, that's really a lot of what it is. It's a lot of production, coordination, and then editing the photos to make sure that from start to finish, you're, you know, you're executing what you want the story to tell.
When you said, you just talked about kind of being, I guess the word I would use is constrained by sort of, you know, the style of photographer and the house, you know, was it, this thing that you brought to baking as a kid, and which you bring to it now, this sort of, I hate the word creativity, but bringing your own style to things, even traditional things, Was that your instinct with the photography? Was that one of the things that was frustrating the way you just described it? Like, do you think you would have maybe taken things in a more unexpected direction than you were allowed to?
I think so, because it all, you know, it all ends up, it has to be approved by the editor, you know, the chief.
Yes.
So you can do as much as you can do. Like when I'm at Muscle and Fitness Magazine, they did, when I was hired, they were doing a rebranding.
Yeah.
And they were getting rid of Muscle Beach, California, Venice, and they were bringing gritty New York City basement gyms. Like the playground workout.
Yes.
So they brought me on for a different gritty feel because that's what a lot of my work was like and what I gravitated towards. It wasn't very highly styled. Like David LaChapelle lighting, it was very raw, grit, you know, real, real photography. So they brought me on for that. But when you're at Muscle Fitness Magazine, there's only so much you can do. It's a workout with a guy in Speedos or gym shorts with body oil. And, you know, you're giving content for the readers because that's what they are reading your magazine for.
Mm-hmm.
So you're limited just by the publication that you work for and what your editor-in-chief, you know, deems as acceptable.
Right.
So it was limiting in that way.
Throughout these years, are you baking at home? If somebody were to graph the time you spent baking over these years, would it be a straight line? Would it be all over the map?
It was constantly thread throughout. I mean, for me, baking was a way to alleviate stress. I would show people that I cared by baking for them. I would love to have parties and entertain and have people over. So it was always the theme in my life. It wasn't just wasn't anything that I thought about doing for a living. It was just an interest of mine. It was a passion. I always loved food. I would love to eat. I would love to go out and I would try different things and I'd always try something once. Like I would always, you know, bone marrow, weird fish guts, whatever it is, give it to me, I'll try it, no big deal. But I've always just enjoyed food. Yeah. You know, it's the culture, it's the people, it's the conversation, it's the different concoctions that, you know, people put together. And it's always just been an interest of mine. But it wasn't anything that I had thought of as, like, you know, anything more than just a passion or just a part of who I was and what I like to do.
Yeah. Really. What about any inclination you might have had or not toward entrepreneurship? You said your dad was an entrepreneur.
I know. I was like,
did you have an entrepreneurial, maybe not at the time, but if you look back now, do you, are there, like, well, you know, like producing a shoot to me, if you're naturally good at that, that's probably an indication that you have certain skills.
I think that I had always just dabbled in that. It was just something that came naturally to me. And I think because I was, my grandparents owned their own business, were forced to retire at 85. My father had his own business, or still has his own business. So I grew up with that. And I just think that, you know, this question kind of comes up a lot when I do, you know, you're talking about, you know, women's movements and whatnot, hugs and all that stuff, a little bit different. But, you know, I talk about this in terms of being a woman in business and you know, how you inspire other women in business. And I always say it's not necessarily about being a male or a female. I just grew up thinking that anything was possible, and my parents supported me in anything I wanted to do. So it wasn't like, you know, are you a woman entrepreneur? It was like, yeah, I have a passion and I made a business out of it and we're thriving and it's great. You know, I think that it's something that I was just raised with. It was like there were never any boundaries. It was always just supported, and it wasn't even said. It was just whatever you want to do, roll with it. So I was doing show production when I, you know, was at the height of my going to shows and concerts when I was in high school. Before that, I tried to make a little bag line. We called it DNA. I did it with my sister. Her name is Adrienne. And, you know, we got samples made and nothing happened of it because I think that I was like 12 or 13. But
so that
it was
like your initials? Is that
Yeah, that was our initials. DNA. You know, it was a little business idea that I had. So my mom cultivated it and helped me get samples. And, you know, she probably would have supported me if I tried to do something with it, but then I went on to the next thing. So I was always doing little things like that.
And you felt a comfort just having an idea and just trying to actualize it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because why not? That's where my trigger happy
instincts
kind of go into play.
That to me is part of an entrepreneurial makeup, right?
Right.
If I could just pause for 1 second and ask you this. You know, you just said, you know, women, you know, can I ask, you're what, in your 30s?
I'm 37.
Okay. So this comes up a lot on this show. I try not to bring up, you know, I try not to have people speak to for their demographic.
Sure.
And I say it all the time, you know, I don't think anybody wants to be a woman chef. I don't think anybody wants to be a gay chef. I don't think anybody wants to be a black chef.
You want
to
be equal. You just want to be.
You just want to be that thing. You want to
be
a chef.
What you are,
you know, I've been invited, not a lot, but definitely I've been encouraged by fellow writers to bring up the Jewish thing again. Oh, you know, there's a Jewish so-and-so society and you could go speak at I'm like, I don't want to get booked because I'm Jewish.
Right.
I really don't. I mean, I've got no problem with anyone who wants to.
Right.
But I don't want to have those kind of adjectives attached to my work, you know? You're nodding as I'm saying this, you know?
There's a lot going on right now in terms of the female movement, female empowerment. There's women's groups. There's, you know, women's marches. There's so many things that are happening right now in terms of liberating the woman. And there's a lot of stuff that's happened that's led, you know, that's led up to that.
Yeah, of course.
Hence the... You know, the hugging.
No, but what I meant was, well, first of all, we're in the tri-state area, which, relatively speaking, there's less of all kinds of issues, right? But what I was going to say is, do you ever get approached in those terms? Do you ever decline invitations that are based on that, or where that's part of it? Do you ever shut that down in an interview? Have you ever?
No, I'm happy to talk about it. I think that if I ever do decline, it's because there is so much of it. Mm-hmm. There's so much female entrepreneur, female in business. It's more that than it really is female in the food space for me.
Yeah.
I am a trained pastry chef. I went to culinary school, you know, but I get approached all the time, whether it's panels or it's women's groups or it's women's dinners, about, you know, just being a female in the workforce and owning your own business and whatnot. And I find that, you know, I speak to a lot of my other friends who own businesses and they're females and I support it, but it's also, I don't want to go so far on the other extreme where it's like a girls' club and men are not allowed. It's this delicate balance where you don't want to do the opposite of what you're trying to accomplish by empowering women. I think, like what I said before, it's more about not if you're a male or a female entrepreneur, but it's about anyone can do this if they have a passion and they can get it off the ground and they're dedicated into making it happen. It's not because you're a woman. I think that there's camaraderie.
Yes.
And I think that right now it's a time where women are kind of speaking up and supporting each other more than they had in the past. And that is a really nice result of all of the things that are going on around us. Because I don't think that 10 years ago or 9 years ago when I started the bakery, it wasn't like this now. There weren't as many female entrepreneurs working towards the same goal, willing to help each other. And some of the few groups that I am a part of, you know, it's a really nice system to have that support around you so that, you know, I can call up a friend or I can go out to dinner. We all have this thing in common where there's lots of boys clubs, right? Lots of men go out and they talk about work or they talk about business, but there weren't a lot of female groups where you could kind of do that. A lot of these females being mothers. So it's about balancing motherhood with entrepreneurship, and that's something that you can't get everywhere, and that's the takeaway that I get from that. I think that that's the plus, and I think people are now starting to speak out and they're starting to mentor and they're making themselves available and these groups are forming. But I think that it's also, you know, it's also a saturated time and there's so much of it. So to kind of go long, you know, full circle, because I think I went off on a tangent a little bit because there's a lot to say in this area.
I'm all about tangents.
There's
this
a
show
lot
could
to
have
say.
Been called tangents. Nobody would know they were supposed to listen to it though, but it could have been. This is I'm all for tangents. Okay, so you mentioned a little while ago a light bulb moment.
Yeah.
What was it and when did it happen?
I was at great transition, by the way. Away from the tangent to my light bulb moment because I'm about to talk about Speedos.
Lest you think I'm not paying attention.
No, not at all. I was at Muscle and Fitness magazine. Yeah. I was sitting in my cubicle and I was editing one of my latest shoots. It was Muscle Men and Speedos, and it was body oil and bitch tits. And bitch tits is a phrase. It's when men's breasts grow down because of steroid use. They actually have breasts, boobs, and the nipples are, anyway, it's like,
you haven't covered that on the show?
You haven't covered that before? That doesn't come up often with any of your,
I'm glad we got it in before our 100th episode.
Your culinary masters.
Maybe I'll make this our 100th episode. Just put,
it's basically the equivalent,
and let people,
it's the equivalent
in.
Of,
oh wait, why bitch? Why of, why is that the modifier?
They just call it bitch tits.
Yes, but why?
Back knee bitch tits. It's just a, right, that's another sexist. There you go.
Maybe not so much of a tangent. It actually all comes back.
Don't even understand what that means. Like why you would call it that.
That's anyway. Just what I know it as.
Okay.
But anyway, bitch tits, body oil, and it rhymes. Yeah. So let's just roll with it. And Speedos. And I had just gone into my boss's office and I had asked for a raise and there was not a raise for me. And I was working so hard and I was so stressed out. And I went back to my cubicle, leaving his office. And I sat down, I'm looking at this computer screen with this muscly man. And I was like, what the hell am I doing with my life? I was like, am I really going to do this? Like if I thought about the 10-year plan and in 10 years, am I going to be sitting here and I'm going to be, you know, just higher up on the chain and I'm still going to be doing this and I'm unhappy and I'm stressed out and I'm just doing something that doesn't really matter to me, you know? Like, I loved my coworkers, and it was, I have great funny stories from being the photo editor at Muscle and Fitness magazine, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't fulfilling that need. It wasn't like a forever thing for me. So, and also at the time, and still to this day, you know, editorial is very transient. You would be freelance for 6 months and then move to another gig, and, you know, you would, magazines were folding left and right. It was a really scary time.
What year are we in?
That was 2010, 11.
Okay.
Yeah, because
so
I had.
Years ago.
And everything was folding.
Yep.
All the I felt like I had the kiss of death. I would leave a magazine, it would close, and then I would like go to the next one, and I was like, "Is it me or is it the industry?" It was the industry, but it was time for a change. So I said, stopped and I thought, and I was like, what am I really passionate about? And I was like, I love food. Mm. What can I do with this? I had no idea what I wanted to do, but I knew that I wanted to immerse myself in the culture, get formal training, because I had never had formal training. I always loved looking at cookbooks and collecting cookbooks, and I would watch baking shows, and I would bake and entertain, and but only to a certain point. I never developed my own recipes. I never really made something from scratch, like every once in a while from a cookbook, but mm-hmm. it wasn't something that I had really put a lot of time and effort into. So I said, okay, I want to learn, and I want to really immerse myself in the culture, and I want to gain the skills, because you can always do something with a skill set, and even if it's just a passion, I'm going to, you know, be able to make amazing desserts or amazing dinners or something, like I'll get something from it, mm-hmm. whatever I end up doing with it. So I, you know, within a week, in true Dana fashion, I quit my job. I found a culinary school. Mm-hmm. I went to ICE, Institute of Culinary Education. Mm-hmm. And I enrolled in culinary school within 2 weeks. So it all happened very quickly. And everyone thought that I was crazy, except for my mom. She was really my number one supporter. And she said, like always, and growing up, whatever you want to do, I support it. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew that I didn't want to just quit my job at 30, go and, you know, bake cakes for friends out of my house. Like, I wanted to get formal training. I wanted to learn knife skills. I wanted to learn about all the different types of cuisine. I wanted mm-hmm. to eat the best butters.
Did you go into a pastry program?
I did end up going into the pastry and baking arts program. Yeah. I did not do savory.
Yeah.
When time allows, I would love to go back and get formal training in savory, because it is something I'm also passionate about. Got it. I have a huge sweet tooth.
Okay.
So for me, I knew that I wanted to focus on baking.
Okay.
So that's what I did.
And why cooking school as opposed to, say, you know, going and sort of staging, apprenticing? I mean, you're obviously a driven person. You're very together. You got a lot of energy. And this is after, you know, this is on the brink of having your second child, right?
Right.
So I'm trying to imagine, you know, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Even you are like, oh, yeah.
Watch
you,
out. Yeah, it's like, no, oh, my God, I'm tired just thinking about her. Right.
So it seems to me you would have been a prize apprentice, stagiaire, assistant pastry cook.
Well, I did that when I was in school. So I...
But I'm just wondering why you... It seems... I'm not quibbling or...
Sure.
I'm just wondering... Seems to me you probably could have gotten everything you got. Maybe it would have taken slightly longer, but you would have gotten paid for it instead of paying for it. Seems to me like you probably could have soaked up a lot of that just going to work. Did you consider that?
Until you just mentioned it, it was never even a thought.
Really?
I just instantly was like...
Sorry.
No, you're so... That's great. I mean, I will... You know, hope my daughters, if they ever want to do it, I'm going to be like, you know what you should do?
This is because you didn't come up as a cook, right? It wouldn't occur to you.
It didn't even occur to me. And now, of course, that makes sense. And, mm-hmm. you know, you meet people in the industry and you hear people's stories. And, that's how it's done a lot of the time. But for me, I didn't even think about it. It wasn't an option. I was like, all right.
This was your orientation.
Yeah, I want to stay in New York City because I already went away for school and mm-hmm. I've already worked up the ladder, and I don't want to go on a campus somewhere and have to, you know, uproot my life. So it's like French culinary or it's ICE. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to just learn French cuisine at the time, French culinary. So I went to ICE. And
so this was before the FCI transitioned to the ICC.
Before. Mm-hmm. Okay. And this was also when ICE is old building. Now their new facility is amazing. Yes.
Yeah, now it's this is weird because I don't watch any of these shows, but now I do refer to it as the Starship Enterprise.
It's crazy. Yeah. I'm like, I just want to go back, you know? Like,
They'll beam you up from here.
Yeah, I've been there. Let's do it.
They'll do it.
But I didn't even think about that. But when I was in school, I, you know, dove in, obviously, and I was doing nights and weekends at school. And then during the day, I found a pastry chef, Gustavo Sock. He helped open up Lexington Brass. He was with EMM Group at that point.
What's, I don't know what that is.
They were, EMM Group is, cut out all of my floundering. When you ask me like a direct question with a name, it's the pregnancy brain. Everything is just losing my Lexington Brass. What is the name on 14, the name of the restaurant on 14th Street, which it closed. They have Catch, the EMM Group. They have all of those restaurants.
That's okay. I'll cut out the question.
Anyway, some of them have closed.
You can pretend you just said EMM Group.
Yeah, so EMM Group.
But the pregnancy, it's... Anyway, go ahead.
The pregnancy brain?
Well, it does. It's, I think it should be called something else because you don't get it back.
It's gone forever.
Yes, that's, it's not about pregnancy. It's,
it's
like
been gone since
it's
my first.
Mom brain.
But now it's just worse
it's
because
mom
it's
brain.
Like,
yeah.
You know, you're 7 months in and it's like.
We have twins. So
you do.
My wife was pregnant once.
Right.
You don't get it back. It doesn't come back.
It doesn't
Our kids
come
are 15.
Back.
You don't get it back.
But I will say it's worse when you're pregnant. Without
a
doubt.
I believe you. Again, I accept all detail, anything like this. I'm not going to argue. How could I possibly? But I have had this.
Trust me.
I've had this conversation with enough women to know this is a real thing.
It's an actual real thing. It's the hormones. It's an actual real thing. So when I'm faced with questions where it's an actual factual answer, sometimes my mind just blanks. And then it's going to come to me at 2 a.m. and I'm going to be like, can I text you and tell you what the name of that chef was?
Yes. Anyway. Catch.
Oh, so I was in...
Or that EMM.
I had a friend that knew a couple people in the food industry, and he said, I have a friend that's a waiter at this restaurant. Their head pastry chef is looking for a cook. Maybe you want to talk to him and meet him, and you never know. Mm. So he took a liking to me. Gustavo took a liking to me, and he really mentored me, and he brought me in, and I helped open Lexington Brass, and I was one of their pastry cooks. So he really taught me, because you can't learn speed, and you can't learn a lot of things in pastry school. You really get that knowledge from just real work in the environment, and it's completely, it's the school of hard knocks. That's the best way to learn.
It's the difference between, it's the difference between a flight simulator and actually flying a plane.
Completely.
Or boot camp and combat.
And it was better schooling for me than culinary school ever was.
Yep.
Right? So they were happening at the same time. So nights and weekends, I was in culinary school, and then when I wasn't in culinary school, I was working as a pastry cook, doing service twice a week, and I was doing production during the day. So I was really burning the candle at both ends, and I was just in it. I didn't want to waste time once I finished culinary school having to do that as my externship. I wanted the experience, and the value of that was that I learned that restaurant life was not for me. Working in the kitchen was not for me. That was not the environment that I thrived in. I didn't like doing the production. I didn't vibe with it. So I knew that, you know, when I graduated from culinary school, that I wasn't going to be working in kitchens. I had to figure out what I was going to do. And I didn't know what that was until later on.
This episode is brought to you by Cart Driver, Denver's home for wood-fired pizzas, fresh oysters, seasonal market plates, cocktails, and conversation. Tucked in a 640-square-foot shipping container space in the heart of Denver's Rhino neighborhood, Cart Driver is the perfect place to stop in for an Italian-style spritz, Prosecco on tap, and a wide variety of tinned fish. Open for lunch, dinner, community hour, and late night 7 days a week, Cart Driver is here for you with fresh, domestically sourced ingredients, and above all, hospitality. Learn more at cart-driver.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Dave Arnold, and I'm the host of Cooking Issues here on Heritage Radio Network. Every week, I answer listeners' questions on the latest innovative techniques, equipment, and ingredients in the food world. Have a question about hot rotting your oven to make great pizza? Give us a call. Hydrocolloid, sous vide, liquid nitrogen, no problem. You can find Cooking Issues wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to the show. I'm going to get you right back to the rest of my interview with Dana Pollack of Dana's Bakery. Before I do, just a quick reminder as I rush through this introduction during a holiday week. As always, if you have a moment to rate or review the show on iTunes, it is the one thing we ask of our listeners. We really do appreciate it, and it does help people find the show. So if you would take a moment to do that, we'd love you for it. And if you'd like to follow the show in another fashion, the best place to do that is our Instagram feed. The handle for that is @chefpodcast. That is @chefpodcast. And with that, here you go. This is the rest of my interview with Dana Pollack of Dana's Bakery. I hope you enjoy it.
When I was in culinary school, I fell in love with the French macaroon. You know, it was one of our mods. It was one of the cookies that we made in the cookie, you know, section of training.
Yeah. And mod is short for module.
Yes.
It was like a,
right.
a day or a half. It was
exactly. We didn't spend much time on it.
But it was an isolated, self-contained lesson.
It was just one of the things that we made in a group, in a big, large group of cookies.
Yep.
And I was like, holy crap, you know, I've seen these things around.
Yes.
But I didn't really know what they were. First of all, they're a pain in the ass to make. And you look at all these cooking shows, and it's really a dessert to be reckoned with. It, you know, you don't just put a ball of cookie dough on a plate and shove it in the oven. There's multiple steps. It has to be done right. There's different methods to making them. And the photo editor in me loved how visually gorgeous they were. They are just these really pretty, you know, I don't call them cookies. I hate when people do that, but mm-hmm. for lack of a better word, these really beautiful cookies that have this unique texture that I had never really experienced before. They're mm-hmm. a little bit hard on the outside, soft and chewy in the middle. And I instantly fell in love, and I was like, oh my God, the French macaroon. And by the way, I don't say macaron because I don't speak French. I'm from New Jersey, and I say macaroon because that's how I say it. But just spell it with one O, and it's fine. I get a lot of that, you know, a lot of hate. People get really irritated.
Do you get, like, emails and comments?
Anytime
and stuff?
That there's a press thing in the comments, they're like, she can't even say macaroon
so
properly.
So that's why you say it now.
I watched a dollar every time.
I watched one of the TV segments you've done.
Yeah.
And you've got that line down.
Because it's true. It's like one of those.
Yes, I get it. You're like, you're preemptively addressing
that
criticism.
Right.
Yeah, good. I think
it's
perfect.
What's the difference between macaroon and macaron? And I'm like, well, they're totally different, but just spell it with one O and we'll be okay.
Yes, got it.
I don't care how you say it, just spell it with one O.
Well, the other thing to me about, you know, this thing you produce, now I'm too, I don't know what to say. This
how
thing
did you say it before?
Macaroon.
Yeah. Thank you.
You know, my best friend from high school, who was my roommate after college in New York, you know, he used to get so mad at when people would say French words with an accent.
Like,
in the US.
I'm not going to say croissant. I'm going to say croissant.
Yes.
You know?
When people say, I'm going to Cannes. And he's like, it's Cannes. We're and in New York. Like,
and Ibiza. I'm sorry.
Well, the idea was that you need to pick a lane and stay in it. Like, if you're going to pronounce French words that way or Italian, then you should pronounce all of them that way. Right. And if you're not, then get over yourself.
Case in point.
Right? That was the idea.
That's exactly what I'm going for.
Yes.
So I fell in love with the French macaroon.
Yeah.
And then I started to, you know, sought them out around the city. But they
you
weren't...
You mean to see what...
I was into them. I wanted to eat them. I would always get them when I saw them out.
But was this like R&D? Were you trying to see what you liked about different people? You weren't thinking
that
far
ahead. No, I just liked
them.
Yeah. You know, I just loved French macaroons. But at the time, French macaroons were not as popular in the States as they are now.
Mm-hmm.
And the few places that carried them all made them in the same French flavors. Lavender, rose, pistachio, dulce de leche. And I was like, what gives? Like, how come people aren't making these amazing pastries in flavors that are so Americanized and what we eat all the time? Like, what's wrong with red velvet or birthday cake or s'mores? Like, why can't someone transform this canvas into something that you'd actually want to eat? I'm not a lavender rose person. To me, different strokes for different folks. Some people love it. To me, it tastes like soap. And it was constantly just, you know, let down and uninspired. And that's when I had that moment, another moment, when I said, okay, maybe this is something that I should be doing.
Mm.
And that's when the concept for Dana's Bakery came about, when I was in school, towards the end of my
teaching. So what were some of the first ones did you try your first ones at home?
So,
like, what was some of the experiments?
So, yeah, so the first time I tried, well, I would, let's see, you know, when we were in school, I started to develop my recipes. So my mom helped me find a small test kitchen in New Jersey, because mm-hmm. there's these laws in the tri-state area that you can't. Once I decided I wanted to do Dana's Bakery and I knew I was going to focus on the macaroon, you know, where do you start? I didn't go to business school. I don't have a business partner. Is it even really going to work?
Mm-hmm.
Is this just something I'm going to make for friends and, mm-hmm. you know, get bored with it and move on to the next or mm-hmm. whatever the case may be? So my mom, being the ultra supportive person that she is, and throughout this whole process, helped me find a test kitchen, an incubator kitchen in New Jersey of all places, because that's where she lives and, you know, not too far. And I would go in and I would treat it like a business. I would recipe test and I would come up with my recipes. And so I would rent it out a couple hours a week.
Was this like a commissary situation with a lot of other people?
Yeah, we would rent a couple of hours.
Yeah.
A week or a month, and I would work out of there, and they had everything. I just had my one rack that was in my rental, and my ingredients stayed there, and that was it.
Right.
And I would drive out there, and I would do my thing, and I'd come back to the city. So I developed my recipes there, and the first ones were s'mores, red velvet, orange creamsicle, and those are all still on my menu today. So like my star lineup is pretty much, you know, we have different flavors that rotate every month. And seasonal, we have flavors of the month, and now we have additional products. But at the time, the few that I started with are still my star players mm-hmm. and, you know, the main flavors that we consistently have.
So how big's your full roster?
So
of macaron.
Macaron. we have at all times at least 15 or 16 flavors, but we have made over 90 different flavors.
Wow. You brought me a bag of stuff.
Yeah.
Which you can't even eat. I have an almond allergy. By the way, anyone out there, granola and macaroons, if you have an almond allergy, don't go by what you're told by the person selling stuff to you, because half of them don't know.
Right.
There's almond flour and macaroons, and there's almost always almonds and granola.
Always.
So when they go, no, it's just granola or something like that, they're not trying to kill you, but they don't know what
they're
talking
about. But they're trying to kill you.
Don't eat that stuff. Okay. So is there a list in here?
So you should have a flavor card.
Ah, okay. Here
and
we go.
Those are the... Dana's
brings the flavor. Okay. Birthday cake. Orange creamsicle. Fruity cereal.
Made with fruity pebbles.
Oh, my God. Cookie dough. Nice. Red velvet. You know what? I may just get some Benadryl and have some of the ones you have.
Yeah, let me know how that works out for you.
Yeah, I may just, or I'll eat it. I'll eat it like near an. And I'll eat it near an emergency.
Get that
clinic.
EpiPen ready.
I'll eat it near a urgent care facility. I'll just go to the waiting room.
Yeah,
and
just eat
just
it.
Sign up, and they'll say, "Why are you here?" And I'll say, "Well, I have an almond allergy, but I got to eat this stuff." Key lime pie, strawberry shortcake, PB&J. So if my eyes are.
Do you see how excited you are by reading these flavors?
Peanut butter's in the center, and the J is the dough, or the what do you call it? Is it the cookie?
So I call it a shell.
What's that technically called? The shell. That's your own term?
Sure.
That's not what other
people
would
call it. I don't
call
it a cookie.
Okay. S'mores, chocolate molten, raspberry jam, champagne celebration. Ooh, cotton candy.
And then the flavor of the month. So we do a flavor of the month, and this month's flavor is chocolate covered potato chips, which we teamed up with Lay's.
For real?
Yeah. So, you know,
how unsnobby of you. Right.
I'm very excited about it.
Because that's what you want.
Yeah. Well, here's the deal.
It makes total sense.
I love food and I love candy. So why wouldn't I make these amazing macaroons in flavors that I actually want to eat? And that's what the inspiration is. So, you know, around in October, we have different candy themed. We have Nerds. We have Starburst. We have Three Macketeer, which is like Three Musketeer. You know, and since then, we've expanded the product line. And we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in a little bit. But, you know, so we're known for thinking outside the box and putting a spin on traditional desserts that people don't usually play with.
Okay. I can't look at this list and not ask you. And if you don't want me to, I mean, you got a kid already.
A favorite?
No.
Okay, good. That's a hard question.
I can take like this out question. If you don't want this out there. Are you a stoner?
No. it was so funny. And you can keep it in there. That's totally fine.
I mean, look at this list. Come on.
You think that's how they can?
Can you imagine?
I think
if
it would,
I'm like
well,
this,
I think
not
if you were
on
wasted,
drugs.
Wasted. This would be. Well, no. This is like for anyone.
Yeah. The irony is that I've smoked weed in my life 10 times, and I can count it because it was that few.
Yeah.
And the last time that I ate a whole package of double stuffed Oreos.
Yeah.
And the acting on Sex and the City was bad. I was in college, and I was like, "That's it. I'm never touching this stuff again." I was like, it's never really been my thing.
No, I'm not advocating one way or the other, but like these flavors.
Sure.
Oof.
I think that people that eat the stuff when they're stoned, they like it in general. They just are too controlled and they let their inhibitions go and they just indulge. I just indulge all the time. I don't care. I have no guilt.
I actually thought you were going to tell me no when I asked you the question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't need a reason to eat the stuff that I love. I'll just eat it all the time anyway.
Well, you know, I've mentioned this on the show before, and I don't think I've ever said this to a male guest of the show, which probably means something, but I think I've been accurate about this when I sense it. You know, our daughter is hugely creative.
Yeah.
She plays four instruments.
Cool.
She does the kind of baking that you do. I don't want to say where because I don't know if it was legal, but she actually once spent a day in a pretty well. Somebody saw a picture of her on my Instagram, one of my friends, and said, "Have her come in for the
day." That's great.
Yep. And but she has what I call creative fluency. She has ideas. She doesn't torture them. She just executes.
Yeah.
just executes.
And you're saying that to me because that's a huge compliment.
Well, I feel like you
so
have
thank
that.
Thank you.
I said it to Elise Cornack, who used to have the restaurant Take Root in Brooklyn. It once in a while, somebody strikes me as having that. You know what I'm saying when I say
well,
it.
Well, that is really sweet. So thank you. I'll take
but
it.
You mean,
I get it.
You get it right away.
I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you have an idea. You're not tortured by it.
You make it happen.
You make it happen without a lot of sturm and drang.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what this strikes me as. This
well, she should come hang out with us for a day or two.
Well, I was going to ask you off air.
Anytime. Our headquarters are in New Jersey, though, so she'll have to go there. It's 6,000 square feet. It's hard to get that in the city. But anytime,
listen,
you come on down.
Thank you very much. I get being in New Jersey. It makes a lot of sense for a lot of people. You know, I've heard you mention this in other interviews. I know part of this is the way macaroons or class. I'm going to find a new way to pronounce it. Macaroons. Gluten-free.
Yep.
And kosher.
That's right.
Okay. And that's true of all your products?
Everything that we make is gluten-free and kosher.
Yeah. Now, why that decision for things that don't inherently need to be that?
So, by nature, macaroons are gluten-free.
Yep.
So, when we started making them, it's so easy to, and also most of our ingredients are kosher. So, by nature, you know, it's so easy to do. So when creating these flavor profiles, it's so easy to just continue the trend. And there's so many people that have dietary restrictions or they have sensitivities. And why wouldn't I just make that available to them? And it's one of my greatest joys where I have people that come to me, or especially mothers, and say, you know, my child has celiac. She hasn't been able to have a dessert that she actually loves for so long. Like, thank you for having this. Mm-hmm. Option for her. And it's so easy to do. So I just don't understand why you wouldn't. The kosher, one of our large clients at the time was kosher. So we had to get kosher supervision. And we kept it because there's a great market for it. And why not?
Totally.
It can't hurt.
You know, I live in Hastings on Hudson. Mm-hmm. There's a bakery there. I won't name them since I mean, I don't know if you guys are even competitors. But they are kosher and I believe also gluten-free.
Okay.
But nobody, you would only know it if you were talking to them. They don't
It's not who we claim to be. It's just a part of who we are.
Right. It's not part of your...
You would never know.
It's not part of your outward-facing persona.
Right. It's, you would never know that we were gluten-free specifically because kosher is a different story. But gluten-free, it's hard to, you know, find desserts that taste good that are actually gluten-free. So the macaroons by nature are gluten-free. But when I developed the second product line, the Mookie and the Rainbow Black and White Cookies... It took us 2 years to develop the recipe for the flour because I'm not into store-bought gluten-free flour. A, it's expensive. Mm-hmm. B, I don't like the texture. It gets stuck in your teeth. It's just not my thing. And I refused to put out any product that was subpar. Mm-hmm. So it took 2 years to develop the recipe, and it's our own blend of potato and rice flour.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something where, you know, logistically, I have enough overhead as is. I don't want to have a separate facility to make something for an additional product. So now everything that we make has to be gluten-free and kosher so that we can do it under the same roof.
Mm-hmm.
So it took 2 years, but we got there, and it's another. And then we have black and white cookies, but not your average black and white cookie. They are rainbow. And we do them in custom colors, and that's what sets us apart.
So the cookie part is rainbow?
You have it in there.
And then you have the black and white frosting.
Yes. And then we do it in different colors.
Is that made with almond flour?
No, that one you can have, because it's just potato and rice flour. The Mookie is an amazing cookie with a macaroon baked in the middle. So you can't have that one, because for obvious reasons, there's a macaroon in the middle. But, you know, it's just it's putting our spin on a classic dessert. Like, the black and white cookie is a New York staple. The Seinfeld episode about it, you know? Look to the cookie. You know, I
don't
love
know that
them.
Episode, but yes.
I love black and white cookies,
it's
and
one
I've
of my
always
favorite
wanted
things in the world.
Same.
Once in a while, I'll be at some dumpy deli, you know, just to get a Red Bull or something.
A Red Bull.
And they all. No, but they all. What? What's so funny about Red Bull?
It's like Monster. Like Red Bull and Monster.
A Red Bull sugar. I call Red Bull spinach. That's my nickname for it. You know why?
Why?
Because in the old Popeye cartoons,
right,
he would squeeze a can of spinach,
and the muscle
it would go up in the air,
right,
and then he'd go down his gullet, and then he'd da 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 da, and he would like flex a muscle, and he could do whatever.
Right. That's how you feel after.
That's how
a Red
I feel
Bull.
After I drink a Red Bull within seconds.
That's crazy. I know. I can't.
And I drink the sugar free,
which is even worse.
Well, except. For health-wise,
it's even... No, but see, it's not.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well,
But anyway, that's a whole nother, me, the cookie queen, who, like, you know, is, right. I'm talking about healthy, right. The irony.
These also, these aren't sugar-free.
They're fat-free, sugar-free, guilt-free, yes.
They actually have a negative caloric value, exactly. Somehow.
It gives you magical powers.
Let me ask you something, because, you know, this to me is another correlation between you and chefs, which just occurred to me, but you and chefs that we've talked to and that I've observed who've never been on the show. You know, you look, I feel like there's this very cynical, and that's probably even too strong. I think there's a real conservatism right now in restaurants, at least in New York. Mm-hmm. There's a real sameness in food right now.
Yeah.
I think it's directly related to the investment, you know, and people are trying to hedge their bets.
Right.
I think if you look at what really gets people going as customers, it's... And to me, you know, I've only met him like a couple of times. I've never had a long conversation with him. But you look at someone like David Chang, mm-hmm. and, you know, he went cooked at places like Danielle, right? And then he decides to mine this style
do
of
his
cuisine,
own thing.
Do his own thing, and it's all very idiosyncratic. And then he brings on Christina Tosi as pastry chef, and she does things. You mean you must like what she does?
Yeah,
like,
it's great.
The space cake and the...
It's all genius.
And
it's all
the,
great.
And, I mean, the cereal milk mm-hmm. ice cream. I mean, how brilliant is that?
I know.
Right? And I feel like people who operate in that style, who are just kind of doing what turns them on, what they want to eat, really.
They're doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah, but I feel like that's what resonates with people.
Right.
You know, like, honestly, I have friends in the building, and it's fashionable to say this right now, but I mean, if one of them wanted me to come in and render an opinion, I did go to friends and family at one of them. I really don't care about Hudson Yards. I don't care. The whole thing turned, I think it's like the Death Star. You know, forget the politics of it and everything. Right. I just have no interest in walking in there. But you could take a place like Uncle Boone's, which is doing, you know, again, people who's worked at Per Se.
Right.
Doing, you know, this incredible Thai food. Yes, that to me is where I want to eat, you know? And this to me...
It's originality. It's thinking outside the box. And people want something different and they want something new. And I also think that people can sniff out when something's done for the wrong reason.
So, when it's calculated.
Right, when it's calculated. Right. So you always want to be authentic. And I think that if you have a passion and you're doing it for the right reasons... Like, I love food. I love all those flavors.
Yeah.
I didn't start the bakery because I said, oh, you know what? I know that this is going to be a moneymaker. I had no idea if it was even going to work, but I knew that it was something I wanted to try because it didn't exist. And I love to get creative and just see how far I can kind of push the envelope. And I think that in a lot of these people that you just mentioned, they do the same thing in their own way. And really, the sky's the limit.
And it makes, in a way, much in the way that a contemporary American menu in a restaurant, mm-hmm. you can't really oftentimes explain why. It's just if you have, and this is all subjective,
right?
But very often you'll look at a menu and it'll either seem to hang together or it doesn't, even though it might have dishes that have elements of like six different cuisines in them, right? But it'll just seem to make sense.
It's also an experience. You're not just eating, it's an experience. So for us, when I started the bakery 8-9 years ago, we were one of the first online bakeries only.
Really?
Now we have a storefront.
Oh, only.
But now everyone is an online bakery. But at the time, that did not exist. So for me, I knew it was twofold. My photo background helped because I photographed all of my food like I did a sexy bottle of still life. I wanted it to appeal to people. Mm-hmm. And even though someone might not have heard of a French macaroon, they knew the flavor profile and they were more inclined to try it and buy it. So, mm-hmm. you know, online bakery, first and foremost, the whole thing was getting people to buy it, having it look good. Because of social media, I was able to reach the masses and people in different states wanted to try them. And then I had to figure out logistics. And ultimately, that's how my business grew. But so it's twofold. It had to look good in the flavor profiles, and then it had to taste good in order to have people coming back wanting more and telling their friends about it. It's an experience. You can go to any restaurant and eat the food, but when you're not sitting in an actual dining establishment, the experience has to be when you eat it.
Mm.
Because you're not having, there's no ambiance, there's no servers, There's no music. There's no lighting. Yes. It's all about what your interaction is. And when you read this flavor card and you got so excited about the flavors, imagine if you could eat it, because unless you're at like the doctor's for safety,
right.
You eat it, you take a bite, you pass it to your friend. You're talking about the flavors.
Right.
It's all an experience.
Yeah.
And that's what sets these flavor profiles apart from the ones that you can find anywhere that are the traditional, French flavors. And that's what you're speaking about.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it also, it almost puts in a good way more pressure on these little,
bring it on.
Macaroons to deliver, like you said, to deliver that whole experience.
Right.
Because it's funny, I've done some writing about the Bocuse d'Or cooking company, not in 10 years, but, everyone says, the platters get so ornate and they get so out of control. And I go, it occurred to me at some point, because there's no restaurant. They're just putting these plates down in front of a judge, right? So they have to give you whatever.
They have to make up for what's lacking.
That's my personal theory. No one said, but to me, that's what that was all about.
Sure.
Okay, we got to wrap up shortly, if it's not proprietary, what are your, either in general or in specifics, what are your plans for the future?
So, plans for the future. Well, there's lots. I feel like we're always constantly growing, and I'm always trying to improve and expand, I guess you could say. So, on the work front, we just expanded the product line. We have the Rainbow Black and White Cookie, and we have the Mookie, which we didn't talk about.
Oh, I'm sorry, go.
And I'd love to just kind of tell you a little bit about it. It's a cookie with a macaroon baked in the middle.
Yeah.
And it's just another one of those experiences where, I feel like cookies are all the rage now, but they're all the same. And you want that food porn, that warm, gooey opening moment. So this is somehow the macaroon bakes perfectly inside the cookie. So we have the Mookie. We have the black and white. I do plan on coming out with another product within the next year, which I can't tell you what it is, but I promise you it'll be true Dana's Bakery fashion, and it'll be something that people are very familiar with, but they have not seen it with the fun Dana's Bakery twist. So that's what we do with all of our products, if you've noticed.
Will it be another hybrid?
It'll be another hybrid. It'll be something with really fun flavor profiles, and it'll just be visually really gorgeous and fun to eat and shippable.
Mm-hmm.
So we also have our location on the Upper East Side. I plan on opening up a couple of more of those. Mm-hmm. I don't have any standalone stores. I partner with companies that are different yet the same. So mm-hmm. Dylan's Candy Bar, we have a big wholesale business. Mm-hmm. We're 1-800-Flowers, Williams-Sonoma, Fresh Direct, Whole Foods. Mm-hmm. Dylan's Candy Bar was one of our first clients, one of our first wholesale clients years ago, and we're sold in their stores nationwide. I had a location downtown, and I was looking to move it uptown, and I approached them about opening up inside their store because the synergy is just there. They're such a great partner, and they love the idea. So we've been there for a year, and I just resigned. So we'll be there for, many more years to come, hopefully. Mm-hmm. So things like that, unassuming, but it makes sense, where it's not direct competition, but you have the same customers. And whenever you walk in the door, you are benefited by both companies being
there. Sure.
So we have a couple more of those things in the work and some great partnerships. We're partnering with Lay's. I just partnered with Starbucks.
I used to be their marketing representative in another life.
Chris
knew me then.
Yeah, so lots of fun partnerships. There's just a lot of stuff.
Where do you go with Starbucks?
So Starbucks teamed up with Nespresso to create an espresso pod or capsule that you can actually use at home. Mm-hmm. And they hired me to come up with the official recipes for the line and the launch, and it was awesome.
Nice.
So I did that, and I'm, if anyone follows me on social, Dana's Bakery, I do all of the social, and I'm very much all over the stories, and I basically document my day.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone knows that every morning, grande iced Americano, dead of winter, in the middle of summer, on honeymoon in Greece, it does not matter, I'm getting my drink. So I was really the perfect person to do it because I'm such a brand loyalist. And I I get it all the time. So anyway, you can make the espresso at home. I still go into the store and get it, even though I have the pods and I have the machine, but that's just my own creature of habit.
I don't anymore. I used to drink Frappuccino with a shot of espresso.
And a Red Bull topper.
That's good. Oh, quick.
Can you imagine?
That's quick. No, that sounds nasty.
Yeah, a little.
That sounds nasty.
But anyway, partnerships.
But
like
that's
that.
So you that you had to like combine
exactly,
two things.
Exactly. As gross as it sounds, I had to go there.
Listen, no one asked me to do this, but like, let's say there's someone out there who's like a chef or restaurateur or whatever, and they wanted to do a custom thing with you.
Sure.
You would be open to that.
So, you know, I find myself more, even though I'm running a business, I find myself more creative now than I ever was when I was in photo because we think outside the box and we do so much custom work. So we have some great clients across the country. We do custom macaroons. We can print on the macaroons and do logos, faces, custom colors. So yeah, anyone can create a flavor. They can create their, you know, you're getting married or you have a corporate gift and you need to do custom colors. We can do all of that. And that's really the fun because you think outside the box. And I've done stuff from Dorito flavored macaroons to salad dressing flavored macaroons to doing macaroons for Victoria's Secret's new perfume launch. And they gave us the notes and we made a macaroon that matched that perfume.
Yeah.
You know, so there's really so many different things we can do. And I have an incredible team. We have 40 employees. And we all just work together to
That's
make the magic
awesome.
Happen. Yeah.
I see a movie premiere in your future. The Avengers missed
that
out.
That might also be
the
something.
The Avengers missed out.
That might also be something in the works.
You should
so
have
you'll
had, like,
see.
An Avengers Endgame.
A macaroon superhero?
Yeah.
Like, you could have assigned each of these to, like, you know.
I know. I do love my
the
comics.
The Avengers. Anyway.
I know.
All right, we got to wrap this up. I could talk to you for another hour probably, but thank you for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
I'm sorry
so
I was
fun.
Late. I'm sorry about all the tangents. You brought out something in me. I apologize. I work really hard not to
It was fun. It's all
myself.
Welcomed. It's so, all welcomed.
Anyway, thank you. And thanks for the bag of stuff. I mean,
That you can't eat, but you can share it
It'll
with
be
your
vicarious,
fam.
Yes. Yeah. No, it'll be gone before midnight tonight.
You can have the rainbow black and whites. There's no almond
Don't
in
worry,
there.
I will.
Yeah. You let me know what you think.
Okay, great to meet you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And that's our show for this week. Dana Pollack, thank you for being my guest. Chris Gurdovich, thanks for making that introduction. I'm really glad we were able to get that interview in, and I was really glad to meet Dana. And I hope maybe my daughter will go spend some time at that bakery one day. I think she would enjoy that, and I'm working on convincing her that that's true. Jeet Paul, our engineer, thank you as always, Jeet, for splicing these things together. And to all of you out there in podcast land, thank you for listening. If you are in the United States and celebrating, happy 4th of July. I hope you enjoy some time off. I hope you got Friday off too when you have a 4-day weekend ahead of you. And we'll see you back here next week with another episode of Andrew Talks to Chefs.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.